everybody, and welcome back to the Chilluminati Podcast, episode 357. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Mike Martin, joined by my two beautiful co-hosts, Jesse and Alex. And
beautiful baby!
You're looking good today. You know, as long as if we pay you compliments, maybe your technology won't shit out on us, because Jesse's
tech... No, that doesn't sound right. That doesn't sound correct.
Been, like, miserable for him today.
If you'd like to replace Jesse's tech... Head over to patreon.com/Chilluminati Pod
right into it.
And like instead it. Of and instead of you know whatever else, whatever latte you millennials waste your money on. Just kidding. I am literally, I could not be more of a millennial.
Yeah. Give me that money so I can waste it on a latte.
Yeah, no, we're gonna waste it on fixing your tech.
No, I'm certainly not gonna downgrade to like calling in by phone. No, guys, I got new tech. It's I'm using my phone, and don't ignore these Motorola latte cups. It's whatever.
Hey, you know the headset that came with the PS5?
I'm logging in via my PlayStation 4 right now.
Dude, they put Discord on Xbox. Get ready, dude. I got a new solve for the show.
Nitro with Game Pass.
Yeah. Nitro with Game Pass sounds made up, but it's like not made up.
Actually, no, you do get Game Pass with Nitro.
Yeah. It's like not made up. I mean, sounds like something from The Simpsons, but it's real.
To say, but it's no goofier than be like, looks maxer, cavicular, frame mogs, Goon Master 23 at, you know, Anime Expo 2026. It, like, just nonsense words. Like, all right, cool, man.
In jail for shooting an alligator or something, too.
Who knows? When he got mogged by the judge, that was the best one.
He got mogged by the judge? Oh, yeah.
The judge had a better jawline than clavicular.
I just want to point out, depending on where you come from, saying someone got mogged, like, I think the word transmog. I think that he changed his outfit and looked great. Yep. He got mogged, dude.
Like, when you say mog, when you say, like, where you come from, do you mean, like... Astaroth or whatever. And what's it called?
Astaroth? That's first off, almost. Second off, I love it. Astaroth sounds like a dude who 100% like betrayed humanity. See?
That's Astaroth. That's Astaroth right there.
That dog right there knows about Astaroth and the betrayal of humanity.
He still remembers. He was like, in every bark, he sings his song.
I was there 3,000 years ago.
They don't know.
Yeah, exactly, dude. Exactly.
They don't know. I know. He's from Soul Calibur. I know. I'm sorry.
He's so old. He's from Soul Calibur.
You have to stop him. He's back. The Dark Lord's return.
It's crazy because he was born like 16 years, 17 years, 20 years after the Dreamcast, but that's his favorite system. And he still just, he reps it.
I get it. Yeah.
All right. Before we get into the episode today, the last thing I want to like make sure all you guys know is, Jesse, how many tickets do we have left?
Last look, there were, so we sold out of the initial batch, and then I put up the rest of them except for the ones that you guys requested for friends and family. So I think like 16 are still out there somewhere.
All right. They're still up there to grab on the website. Go grab them. Link will be in the description below. You can get over it.
That was a few days ago though. So I can't guarantee anything.
Could be much lower than that.
Don't miss it. What are we going to do? What's something we can promise that's like vague?
I promise that you will laugh.
Okay.
I promise. I'm that's sure good. People who come to our show and have not laughed.
But like, you know
no
what?
No way. We're so funny.
They're probably too drunk or asleep.
Yeah. No, we're so funny.
We're hilarious.
One time
did
I went on Jesse's.
Did you not hear our bit about Astaroth and the dog? That shit was funny, man.
Improv fire.
That dog, by the way, right now is already laying on the ground with both his eyes closed, completely like asleep.
You got all burnt out, like, dude.
It's just all in one big burst.
He'll be back, trust me, but for now he's fine.
Wow. How felt it? All right. Are you ready for it? Let's get into it, boys. I'm excited for today's episode. Because today we're talking about one of my favorite, I hesitate to say alien because it's not really alien. I also hesitate to say cryptid because it's not a cryptid, but one of the highest of high strangeness events that happened in the 1970s that I had come across years ago that I've been wanting to cover on this show, known as Sam the Sandown Clown.
It's going to be one of those episodes. I'm so excited.
thank you so much to Factor for sponsoring today's episode. And tell me if this sounds familiar to you. It's like 8 p.m. You're wiped out from a full day of work. You're hungry. And there's technically something healthy in the fridge that you can make, but actually making it, yeah, it's not happening, at least for me anyway. And eating healthy was never really a willpower problem for me either. It's always more of like a setup problem. And that's where Factor came and has fixed that for me for almost 2 years now, I think, which is crazy. It's fully prepared meals designed by dietitians, crafted by chefs, delivered right to your door. So, you know, you're just hitting your nutrition goals while out without having to plan or do many grocery runs or cooking. It's all that my favorite aspect of Factor anyway. One of my favorite go-tos is the Tex-Mex bowl. It's delicious. It fits my routine super well as well because it's just one of the fastest ones. It's got a really rich flavor to it. And I don't know if I can ever get sick of like Mexican food. I just don't know if it's possible. I keep trying to get sick of it and it just doesn't happen. And Factor builds meals around whatever your goal is, weight loss and overall nutrition, more protein or GLP-1 support. Plus they have a Muscle Pro collection if you're focused on strength and workout recovery. Every meal is crafted with functional ingredients, lean proteins, colorful veggies, whole foods and healthy fats. Then Factor bans 175 plus ingredients, no artificial colors or sweeteners, no high fructose corn syrup, no refined seed oils, just nutrient dense food. I've been using Factor for a while. I think you should give it a go too. Head over to factormeals.com/chill50off and use code chill50off to get 50% off and free daily greens per box with new subscription only while supplies last until September 27th, 2026. See website for more details. Thank you again to Factor for sponsoring today's episode.
I know this sounds fake, but is he that jack-in-the-box clown toy looking motherfucker?
You are dead correct.
Yeah. I think I know this guy.
I just want to say, over on the Reddit, I read someone's reply. Maybe it was YouTube. I can't remember which. One of the many places people can talk about this show. And I was reading someone say, you know, every time they do UFOs or whatever, I think to myself, when are we going to get to, you know, back to killers and, you know, like
it's a never ending loop.
Yeah,
who do killers and it's like, when are we going
to
do weird?
Yeah, it's like, but then they do true crime. And I said to myself, I wish we'd go back to weird aliens and cryptids. And here we are. We're giving you what
you want. I
did one
about a wave of candy that kills people. And you said, great. That's all we want. Candy waves.
Yeah, wave of delicious molasses.
Deadly candy. Mm-hmm.
Deadly candy. We cover so much on this show. No, I don't know. So what do you, other than what he looks like, Alex, do you know of
So here's what I'll say. At one point in time, I kind of like gave up on the topic because I realized it was super vague. But I had this concept of doing an episode on weird guys.
This would fit into the weird guys category.
Yeah. And the reason this one made it on the list for me is it's been a couple years. I barely remember it, but I do remember that I believe it's kids.
Yes.
That interact with this guy. And because of that, it gives the whole thing, like if that one lady, if Project Bluebeam is going to show us whatever God we believe in, if the Disclosure Day aliens can take the form of whatever we need them to feel comfortable. Right. I feel like the what did you say his name is?
Sam.
I think Sam the Sandown Clown. That's a hard one.
It is. It's tough.
Is like a child's version. So like,
hold on.
It comes from like
real quick. Real. I feel like we need to establish a thing, and I know we'll get into it.
Jesse, I'm going to go ahead and drop a link of what this thing looks like. Don't worry, listeners. I will be describing what he looks
like. Because here's the thing. You guys are talking about this guy and Sam, and he has a name. And so, but he's also a toy. Nope, that is not a toy. What the shit?
He looks like a toy.
Oh, yeah. Don't describe it. I'm going to get into it. Jesse, don't
worry. This shit is appropriate.
You said he looked like a toy. You said he's a toy guy. And I'm like, okay. But then you keep talking about him like he's a person.
A jack-in-the-box toy clown looking box man.
Sure, I thought, okay. At first I was like, oh, okay, this is a clown cryptid. But then you guys are like, oh, it's like a toy. And I'm like, okay, so it's just like a da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And he pops out, he's like, I'm creepy. But no, then he started talking like a guy. I just needed clarification.
Is Jack in the Box a national chain? Does everybody know what that is in America?
So. I knew of it on the East Coast. I think it's out here in the South.
It's from San Diego, so it's our, you know, we know it well, but it's, we know it, right? In the 70s, but back in the day, when you used to order your food at Jack in the Box, you would order it through like a clown's mouth speaker.
Don't like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what this looks like. Kind of. Yes, but yeah, like I was saying, the reason this one stuck out to me so much and like I was interested in it was because that same way that one lady made her like alien encounter like Christian, or the same way that you know, all these other ones kind of like take their own spin on the alien encounter based on who they are as a person. This one very much feels like playtime, like a children's TV show sort of like fucking weird character version of an alien encounter. And I remember he says some weird shit.
He says some weird stuff
and does some weird shit. Yeah.
It's more of the high strangeness encounter rather than like your typical alien abduction. But look, here's the pitch. Let me give you the pitch, Jesse. Okay. In May of 1973 on the Isle of Wight, two kids heard a sound like an ambulance siren. They ended up going into a swamp and met some 7 foot tall thing that I showed you the picture of. They saw it dropped its book in a creek nearby. It ate a berry through its ear at one point and eventually told them its name was Sam. And for 40, 50-ish years or so, that's kind of the whole story. I'll get into the details of that story as we go. But last year, a little girl from that field, now a grown woman, came forward to say that they were like just a handful of more experiences she had with him, the Sam individual, as she grew up. Because, and that's the reason is there's like a full episode's worth now, because until last year, you know, like it would fit in a weird guy's episode. Like it would just be a nice little chunky segment. There's a good story there, but we've learned more literally last year.
So yeah, this was going to be full on like a 10-minute chat on a listicle, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. So before introducing the clown himself, since we're going to do a full episode here, let's actually talk a little bit about the father first. The unusual aspect kind of the story isn't that like a 7-year-old returned home after one afternoon having met a giant in a field, because kids have imaginations, you know. A kid coming home and being like, me and my friend were in a field and we were playing with this 900-foot giant or whatever. Cool. Yeah, sure. Whatever. You know, you kind of just agree to it. That part isn't super bizarre. Were you going to say something, Alex?
No, I'm just kind of agreeing with you and kind of that just goes along with what I was saying about it being like from the mind of a child, but an alien sort of pulling their appearance from it. Yeah.
Yeah. So we say it's 1973 and it's in the Isle of Wight. If you don't know much about the Isle of Wight, like I didn't, it's located just off of England's south coast, characterized by, quote, chalk cliffs, beaches, and small villages surrounded by farmland. On its eastern side lies the town of Sandown, which is where he gets his name. It's a seaside holiday destination known for having like caravan sites. It has like pier side. It's just like a nice little touristy area to go. Sandown Airport, located on the edge of town, is like a nice, it's a big airfield that opened up in 1935 as Lee Farm Airport and then was later reopened after the war as the Isle of Wight Airport. By the early 1970s, however, it was either nearing closure or had already ceased operations due to declining use. And this is the story kind of happens in a largely abandoned airfield in this time period. Now, the kids, very little information is actually kind of available about them. The entire family was intentionally kept anonymous at the father's request. However, there is some information available specifically concerning the father. In the report, he's only referred to as, quote, Mr. Y. And he, like I said, we need to talk about him because I think he's a lot more central to this case.
Men in Black agent character.
Yeah, he's Men in Black agent dealing with aliens. This is a whole, this whole thing makes sense now. This is like a whole spinoff story of Agent Y going to have a family and trying to get away from all the aliens. And then Sam the Sandown Clown shows up and he's got to get his gear back out and he's got to put on the shades. And he says,
hello, Agent Y. I have returned. Back in Black.
Back in Black. Yeah, dude. Hire us, please. We can write this movie.
It writes itself.
It does.
Once you see a picture of this guy, you can't wait to make a movie about him.
Now, what's unique about the father is that, like I said earlier, with like the imagination of a kid, most, I feel like most parents would like dismiss this story, but for whatever reason, we'll get into it, the father kind of took this pretty seriously. He took her claims serious for actually kind of a specific reason. He had already experienced similar events himself on two separate occasions, but I will say he uses the word similar events loosely. They're weird events, certainly, but they're not Sam the Sandown Clown level of weird. So for one, on the night of October 20th, 1970, several years prior to the first events, Mr. Y was driving across the island at approximately 7 in the evening to visit a friend in Ryde. Near the village of Brading, with marshland along the River Yar to his right, he says he observed something low over the fields. He decided to pull over to obtain a better view, and he described seeing a wide ring of 7 or more lights, each a large, clearly defined sphere, quote, like a bright red cherry, interspersed with turquoise and white lights.
What?
Then the phenomenon was completely silent. You just think about it, it's like rotating lights hovering in the air.
Yeah,
like
I get it. Yeah, it's interesting. It's just the visual. I just am imagining it and it's weirding me out. Let's put it that way.
Super weird. Yeah. The object, he said, then began to follow him. And after returning to his car, Mr. Y noticed the phenomenon pacing him, drifting approximately 300 yards behind him and rotating slowly. He stopped again, exited the vehicle, and realized he just couldn't get away from this thing. So instead, he grabbed his flashlight, parked the car, stepped out, and began signaling it with his flashlight.
Sure. Yeah, no, that's seems sensible in that circumstance.
Is that not what you, if you're driving, Jesse, and this thing is following you, you can't get rid of it, it's like pacing you, how would you react?
If I didn't know what it was and it was following me, I don't know that I would stop. But I do know you would. Part of me believes.
Oh, absolutely.
That you would be like, gonna take my chances. Me?
100%.
It following me and being weird enough would be enough proof for me to be like, nah, that's probably aliens. Like, I would, just where he's at. It's not a place where this would happen. Like, it wouldn't be like, you're in a city and then you see lights. And then you realize, like, it's a reflection of a thing on a thing. This is, like, in the middle of nowhere? Nah, dude. I'd be like, that's whatever it is, be it helicopter or be it whatever, it's up to no good. I'm out. I'm just going to keep driving until I get to a place where people are.
I'd be out there with a flashlight being doing, like,
It can be so fucking scary, though. It can be so fucking scary. Like, at this point, like, I told you that story about the time I sat in my car for, like, an hour looking at nothing, like, at this point, I would be like in my mind thinking that somebody's trying to kill me. Like, I would be so, so heightened. I would be so heightened.
I don't know that I would think alien, but I certainly wouldn't think safe.
Yeah. Like, I would definitely be like, somebody is not responding to the normal human signals. And my mind would definitely not go to alien until something crazy happened.
Well, dude went out there with his flashlight like I would and started waving that fucker around. And apparently the object responded by idling. It stopped moving and then began to rock back and forth.
With kind the light? Him? Like to the pattern of the light?
Like monkey see, monkey do?
It responded. He didn't say it was like going in beat with him, only that it responded.
He felt that it was, he felt it was communication is what you're saying.
In some way.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the object didn't fly off. So eventually he had to get back to his car and continue driving off to his friend's house. And then the thing followed him, weaving through treetops before, after he got to his friend's house, the thing disappeared. Now, what makes it a little bit more believable is that other individuals on the road reportedly witnessed the phenomenon as well, and it reappeared several times after that night in the area. This is just his encounter with this thing. Now, there's a second encounter that happened about 2 years later on March 1st, 1972, and Mr. Y was on a cliff at Compton Bay, located on the opposite side of the island. This place has like huge beefs and really tall cliffs. It's very dreamy looking. If you look at pictures of this, it's really cool. He said that an unusually aggressive tide trapped him on the rocks with water rising more rapidly and higher than he expected, forcing him to scramble onto a rocky outcrop to avoid being swept away. That would scare me more than any lights. Like,
it's really
the ocean can just fucking take you and kill you and nobody would know.
It's really wild to get trapped. Like, you think it's impossible.
Like stuff like that happened to you before where you're trapped on? Like, I've never.
Well, you like not where I like fucking died and got trapped out there. But like, you know, you get trapped and then you're suddenly, you know, a simple dry walk on the beach becomes like, oh, I'm probably going to like get very wet and also like maybe scratch my shit up really badly on some rocks, you know, like, and, you know, if it's really bad surf, like, you can just get like fucked up. Like, you do not want to be in the water next to something like that.
Yeah, it's just scary. Well, while he was at the top of the outcrop, he was catching his breath, he said. And then as he was looking down at the water, he observed two yellow points of light peering up at him from just below the surface of the water. He described them as, quote, like the eyes of some horrible sea monster. Doesn't say that they were eyeballs, though, just the yellow points of light. And I think I don't really know what to make of it. Now, he also goes on to say that he noticed a low droning sound emanating from the sea during the event that he could kind of describe as like a siren winding down slowly is the way he put it.
OK, I kind of can like at least picture that, you know.
Those were that's where the event ended. Nothing came out of the water to get him. The water eventually receded and he was able to go. Nothing followed him home. The first event is way more strange to me. Like, there's still a part of me with the second event that could describe, like, he may have seen something catching the light weirdly under the surface of the water that looked like two glowing points of yellow light. I don't know what, like, if it was necessarily like something under there, but that first one is like super weird and kind of textbook. It actually reminds me a little of Close Encounters of the Third Kind, that road scene.
Yes, like very much just like lore based, like sort of quintessential epitome of type encounter, like what you imagine before you even get any details.
Yep. So let's get to the encounter itself for the girls. We're looking at a Tuesday afternoon in May of 1973, somewhere around 4 o'clock in the afternoon. His daughter and one of her friends, a boy, are out on the Shanklin and Sandown Golf Club with manicured. This place is like manicured fairways, you know, rolling green stuff. Really, really pretty. And so as they're wandering this golf club, they hear a sound that they say resembles an ambulance siren. One long, monotone, wailing note that kind of just echoed across the golf course. Our reaction to that would be, oh shit, it's Silent Hill.
I'm picturing like a siren, like one of those like little like things that fires off that's like, woo!
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. That's probably closer to what they heard.
But I have to imagine it's different because it's a UK siren, right?
Yes, you're looking at a Isle of Wight off the UK.
So which goes like, woo!
Yeah, so it's like instead of like some kind of, it's like a, like that?
Yeah, yeah, I think that's what they mean. Like they said, quote, one long monotone, like wailing note, so which is like a drawn out note. And them being 7-year-old kids, their reaction was like, let's go check out what that is. Let's go look at what that noise is. They begin walking toward the source. They eventually leave the fairways and pass through some hedges, and they descend into the swampy ground near the largely abandoned airfield we previously talked about. And as they approached, the siren abruptly stopped. Now the two of them are just standing in a marsh with zero sound. They don't see anything other than a small footbridge over a stream just ahead of them. So they go proceed onto the footbridge. And while they are standing on the footbridge, a hand emerges from beneath the bridge, a hand that is in a blue glove with three fingers. And it grabs one of the planks near their feet.
That is from Stephen King's book, It.
I'm saying this is straight out of a fucking horror movie at this point. You're on the bridge and just, you know, out of the marsh slowly.
Literally Pennywise scene one. Yeah.
Scary as hell. And so the entity that the hand belongs to pulls itself up. And what is revealed is a 7-foot tall creature that just kind of made one of the most, I feel like, dramatic horror move entries ever. As it pulls itself up, it's revealed that this thing is holding onto a book. As it gets its, like, it's settling, it fumbles and then drops the book into the stream. So it wades into the water to retrieve it immediately. Yeah, Jesse, are you?
Sorry, I'm just trying to imagine.
Yeah.
A thing
pulls itself up,
but it also has a book because it likes to read.
Yes.
It's a well-read cryptid.
Or we like to read, you know what I mean? And maybe he thinks that it'll help us communicate.
Maybe.
Yeah. Well, to me, it like immediately dispels like the horror aspect of it. Cause it's like this, it is a horror movie scene. And as soon as it gets stabbed, it's like, oops, drops his book. And that's like, oh fuck, I gotta get, and guy like, wades into the stream.
Well, there is something kind of back. Fun. I mean, like about it being clown-esque and then doing clowny things. I don't know.
Well, after it grabbed its book, apparently the creature quickly took off. Like it just left. And which is kind of bizarre, but they said, which is also bizarre, the way it moved was really weird. The account is it had a bounding high need hop that they said was reminiscent of like an astronaut on the moon in low gravity. That's how it moved as it was getting away. I was like, boom.
So like almost like how Superman, like he's like not calibrated for our gravity. So he has like different physics.
Exact. Yeah, same idea. He doesn't have, except minus, you know, becoming a superhero, unfortunately, and just being kind of a
weird
clown.
Don't know what. We maybe he changed his clothes. Maybe he just took the note.
Well, as it continues off and it's like bounding away, it eventually bounds away and disappears into a windowless metal hut. Just like similar to, they said, to like there's like a gray structure you would see on a construction site. Just like a
plane. Like an earthly structure?
Yeah, looks like an earthly structure to them. So when they see him disappear at this point, the kids are like, fuck it. We're not going in there. We're going to head back. And they said after they reached, I don't know, maybe 50 yards away, the creature reemerged from the hut and is holding a new thing in its hand. Not just a book, but it's now holding a microphone with a black knob and a white cord that is connected to a small speaker.
Shut up. What do you mean?
Like
karaoke,
like a little look like at when you're a kid.
Little picture I sent you has it in there.
You can like when you're a kid and you have like a microphone attached to like a tape deck and you walk around and you like make noise.
Yeah, yep.
You got me. You know how there's those images where someone will be like, "When you see it," that I was so focused on the ridiculous nature of this thing that you showed me that I didn't realize he had not just a mic, the amp is in there. The man has, I can't believe this.
He was like, "Hi, I'm Peter McAllister. I'd like a large sourdough Jack meal."
When he comes back out, they say after that, like with that out, the noise, that siren like noise resumes at full volume through the speaker. But they realize at this point that the sound is actually microphone feedback.
So maybe he just sucks. Maybe he just sucks at doing like away team stuff, you know, like maybe he's just like a meet cute sort of like Matthew Broderick and Godzilla type character on the away space team who can't handle it. And he's just messing around with his gear like in a Jar Jar Binks-esque way. Do you ever think about that?
Kind of. Whatever the case may be for his personal motivation, this microphone feedback noise scared the boy and he took off running. He was like, I'm
the out. Way you said that. You said it like Jafar. It
scared the boy.
Scared the boy.
It frightens the boy. It
frightens the young whippersnapper.
A poo. Yeah, that's right. A poo betrayed him. That's how it works.
Yeah. He's with him and Iago is with Aladdin. Mm-hmm. So, but with the boy taking off, maybe this is the cause of it. We don't know. The sound ceases and across the open marsh, the children hear the entity's voice for the first time speak through the speaker. And it simply says, "Hello, are you still there?"
Like that?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. You know, as best as I can.
He wasn't even trying to do a clown voice or even like a Bozo the Clown or a Krusty the Clown.
Are you still there? There, is that better?
Wouldn't he be British too?
He would be British. Okay, Alex, you do it then.
I don't know. I've never heard of this guy before.
How do you do a British clown voice? Like,
I don't know. I've never heard of British clown. I'm just trying to give you some motivation, like a good director. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm trying to gas you up.
Hello?
Yep, that's it.
Hello?
Dude.
It's me.
I don't think this guy. I can tell by the way this guy talks, he can't tell the difference between a biscuit and a scone. I can tell there he may take exception to which comes first. The clotted cream or the strawberry jam.
Right. So he's a cowboy clown in this rendition of the story.
Y'all been to Brighton? It's lovely on the beach.
The beach. Yeah. How do y'all say ranch? How do y'all say ranch?
Oh my God. Well, in another piece of high strangeness, despite how far away the creature was in the hut, the voice seemed to be emanating from close by, which is like
from the speaker, right? No.
No, because the speaker's with him.
They're saying that he's far away, next to them?
Yes, exactly. Like, while he was super far away and they could see him far away, the sound of his voice seemed like it was, like, right next to them.
So even the speaker may not even be a speaker as we know it. It may just be some sort of device that broadcasts his voice to other people's heads.
Maybe. I mean, it's possible. That's an interesting theory. Again, this kind of... If we go into the only way to approach this is like, yes, you could say all this is like fooey and nonsense, but like to approach it, if though this has happened, and there's still an argument to be a good argument made that this like encounters in some way happened. If it filters its way through consciousness, kids seeing this stuff and their brain trying to grab onto things that they are familiar with to help with their brains, like making logic of what they're seeing. Like whatever it is that emanates noise to them is being filtered as like a speaker, even though it's literally potentially being beamed into their head, Project Bluebeam style.
Right. And I'll tell you this, even if we never solve this mystery, it's going to be worth it just to, for you, the listener, to type Sam the Sandown Clown into Google Images and just press send. Because not only is there like crazy shit here that is like really interesting, there's some just amazing... like fan art. I don't know what else to call it. There's like fan art of this dude and it all rules.
It's all really cool. Well, throwing with that being said to them, like, hello, are you still there? That seemed to throw away any sense of like stranger danger the kids had. And they both stopped running when they heard the noise. And they said they perceived it as friendly and non-threatening. Like it was just whatever that means. So they go back. And they get close to this thing and like get a good look at this thing top to bottom without it splashing out on the water and like fumbling around and taking off. So what did this thing look at to the listeners for all of our listeners? Let's go top to bottom. First, it's wearing a tall pointed hat that is yellow with a round black knob at the very tip of it and two wooden antennae sticking out the side of its head. The hat locks into a red collar at the base, and then below that, no neck at all. The head just sits directly like on the shoulders, and the head is kind of too big for the body and almost a perfect white sphere. They say the face looks like it's painted on and kind of crudely painted on. Blue triangles for eyes. It has a brown square for a nose. It has a thin, flat yellow oval for a mouth that never moves when it talks. Little red marks on where the cheeks should be. It has sparse strands of reddish hair. It's wearing a tattered green tunic, white pants and blue gloves with long, frilly sleeves. And the arms and legs, they said, look like wooden slats, like scarecrow limbs. With more of those like little wooden slat things poking out at the wrist and ankles for feet and hands. And one of the things they said is like where nobody really knows. The kids never really were able to answer, rather, whether the wooden slats were part of the costume, if they were part of him. They don't really know where that line is. They just said, quote, a cross between a clown, a robot and an alien is the phrase that kind of stuck with everybody after that.
He also looks like Link. A bit. He also looks like a scarecrow a bit.
Yes, very much scarecrow for sure. But again, I want you to think of this filtered through the consciousness of a child. So much of this is just like
weird and ramshackle, but only with like things kids would probably grab onto in their imagination.
The implication you're saying here then is that this thing, whatever it is, they perceived it as a clown. But it
That's a theory.
Okay.
That is my pitch as a theory, okay. Make sense of what it
that's
is.
That's some Disclosure Day type thinking. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's what these kids are saying hello to. And so when they get back to it, the first thing it does is communicate by writing. It lifts up a soggy book, the book that it dropped. It lifts up the soggy book. And in apparently a childish scrawl writes out a message, but it writes the words out of order and scattered around, and then points to them one at a time in sequence as so the kid could read it, which is okay. So weird. So it is. And so then the message was, "Hello, I am all colors, Sam." And I'll just copy paste it. So there's like, you see what I mean?
I am all colors, Sam.
There you go.
Okay. I am all colors, Sam.
Yeah, and that's where the name
Sam comes from. Maybe we should be calling him All Color Sam instead of Sam the Sandown Clown.
It said, well, say hello, and I am all colors. I think I missed the and there. Hello, and I am all colors, Sam. See, like there's like commas there. I think it's like separated. Like it says like as a description of who he is. Like he is all colors.
But also like the way it could be said, hello, and I am all colors, Sam. Like talking to Sam, you know what
you
I mean?
You are Sam, yeah.
Yeah, but their name isn't Sam.
Understood.
Play it again, Sam.
But do they
maybe
know?
Maybe he likes Casablanca.
They don't know. Yeah, it's possible. They don't necessarily know. Who knows? It's a weird thing. So this is like what marks the start of their weird little conversation. First, they realize he doesn't even actually need the microphone, and he can talk on his own. It just comes out stilted and muffled. They describe it as like a bad ventriloquist. Like someone is like trying to talk through a stuffed up mask, and the whole time the painted yellow mouth never moves.
Like he's in there?
They say like a ventriloquist. So, but like it's also, but then they go on to say like a stuffed up kind of sound. So I genuinely don't really know if they mean it sounds like it's coming from in him or if Sam's distant or like it's trying to, I don't really know what their intent is in describing it that way. You know?
Yeah, just fucking weird.
Yeah. So they ask him the obvious question I think we all want to ask. They ask, what are you? And Sam simply answers, you know. That's it. Just, you know.
Oh, you know. Don't worry about it. It's all good.
So they ask, they continue like, seemingly.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah, exactly.
All
don't
good.
You know what I am. Don't you worry about it, you kids. So they then ask if he's a person. And he says no. They ask if he's a ghost, and he gives a weird reply that's kind of fun. He says, quote, well, not really, but I am in an odd sort of way.
Okay.
Which is just like,
maybe he's a pilot of a corporeal robot that he uses to get around in a tangible realm.
Maybe. He also goes on to tell them that he actually doesn't have a name, despite saying I am Sam. But he also says that there are others like him. And to prove it, he draws them a picture of another one. He tells them that he's afraid of humans, specifically that he's scared people will hurt him if they find him. And he promises the kids that even if he were attacked, that he wouldn't fight back. So if anybody found him and they started beating on him, he would just be like, oh, I guess this is my fate. Oh, please make it quick as they just beat him down.
What the fuck?
I don't know. Jesse's deep in research hole right now.
The phrase in an odd sort of way, there's different meanings of that in different places. So like, you know, what we think in an odd sort of way, we're saying something like, it is done differently or, you know, it's peculiar or eccentric or whatever. But there's other versions of it. And I'm trying to figure out exactly what there's a British vibe of like using it to describe attachment.
You're talking about what part are you specifically trying to talk about?
In an odd sort of way, that phrase, okay. An odd sort of way.
Like, but I am in an odd sort of way.
Yeah. And so, there's version like it, in an odd sort of way could mean a different, like there's different ways of using that phrase. And I'm just trying to think, because he keeps saying things. I'm like, what does he mean by that? No, even the use of commas was weird. There's a lot of strange things here. I'm just trying to figure out what other.
It's like moving. It's like moving, like, you know, in an odd sort of way. Like, it could be you're saying, like, maybe he's trying to say, like, some sort of specific hint.
Well, I just
like he's similar to a ghost, but not really.
Yeah.
No. He's saying, he's in an odd sort of way. To us,
I feel like he's almost like I feel like he's almost like not trying to break Prime Directive and reveal actually,
because he goes, well, not really, but I am in an odd sort of way.
Yeah,
right. But like he's not. But that the idea of that,
the phrase,
him saying I am in an odd sort of way to us initially, the idea of I am not, but kind of am, you know, like that kind of vibe. Like, I don't want to give away the goose of what I am. However, the phrase. Will you repeat what you just said to me again?
Well, not really, but I am in an odd sort of way.
I am in an odd sort of way. That thing could also mean like, I'm in an odd sort of way. Like, I'm stuck out here.
I am currently in a weird place in my life.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Yeah. He's not saying, oh, I'm kind of like a weird ghost or maybe, but he's saying like, I'm just in a weird place in life, dude. Like, he could be saying that.
I don't think that's what he's saying, but I understand what you're trying to say.
I'm just trying to British-ism this a little bit.
Sure.
Hello, I'm Dean. I'm British. We don't say that, Jesse.
I'm in an odd sort of way. I'm in a strange configuration at this time.
Yeah. I see. Well, again, according to this own thing, it's the one that's scared. It's 7 feet tall, and it's like it wouldn't fight back if anybody attacked it. It would just let itself get beat up. And after establishing all that, Sam invites the kids to go inside. And like any kids who didn't listen to their parents, they do go.
Of course.
And they crawl into the flap. They crawl in through a flap in the side of the metal hut. And
what?
The metal hut... Okay. Yeah, again, it's a weird.
So did he go through the same flap when he went in?
The kids went through a flap. He went through a door. They went through a flap.
So it's got a door and a flap.
And then as they go into the hut opens up into two levels. So it's not really a hut.
Like Doctor Who.
Like a TARDIS-esque kind of situation. The lower floor has blue-green walls and it's covered in dials. Like a ton of them. They said that they're the dashboard of a small plane or a cockpit was the way they used to describe how like covered this thing was in knobs and dials. There was wooden furniture.
So like literally the TARDIS.
Yes, you're not wrong at all by saying like the TARDIS. And there's an electric heater going in on the inside of it.
Just like a 1940 style like electric heater.
Wait, but where would he plug in the electricity?
Bro, in his little metal hut that is in his two magic, floors for
in
some
his bit, magic
some reason.
Alien hut, bro. He's got electricity.
But I feel like that to me would be of major curiosity. If we're in the middle of nowhere and this guy's like powering stuff, I'd be like,
yeah, well, they've got a wall full of knobs and shit. And it's two stories. Like the whole inside makes no sense.
I guess you're right. It is the TARDIS.
Like the whole thing is like nonsense. Sure. So as they get comfy, Sam then takes off his hat, picks up a berry and puts it in his ear. Then he jerks his head forward and the berry appears at his eye. He jerks his head again and then the berry moves down to his mouth, all like a magic trick. Except it's just happening on his face, I guess.
Okay.
What? He tells them that this is how he eats. And that he drinks from the stream after cleaning the water. The stream that he came out of with
cleaning the water?
Yeah. A man by the name of Norman Oliver, who was one of the people who did some research on this event. He's from the British UFO Research Association, BUFORA for short. He wrote all this up years later and floated a guess that maybe the face was a mask and it was somehow scanning the berry for poison. And then honestly admitted that he was making it all up as like, cause he was just trying to make it up. Like that's while this has all come up. The only thing in the berry world, like the theory is this one dude's like, maybe he was scanning it for poison. But I think it's more likely that if this is actually happening again,
it's being filtered through a kid's brain. And this is all just kind of a weird, all of this, again, wooden furniture, electric heater, hut that has two stories. It may, all of this shit makes no freaking sense. So they sit in that hut for about half an hour total. And at some point, whatever the reason, the kids decide, you know what? We have to go. And Sam, to his credit, does not stop them. He doesn't try. He doesn't like get like grab him or anything like that. He just simply, I guess, waves goodbye. They climb back out the little crawl space they walked in through, head off across the marsh. For the most part, that is the original telling of the story. Like, they go back, they tell their dad that he does some investigation. They said that they turned around after they got some distance between it and the hut. They turned around to see the hut, and the hut was gone. It had just vanished. It wasn't there at all. And they just walk away after that. And that's kind of like the encounter. Most people just kind of, they actually, the first people they go to is the groundskeeper of the golf course they were originally playing at. And the groundskeeper, honestly, just fucking does what every adult does when a 7-year-old and his their friend come over and tell you the story. Because they go over and they tell him they
went
and talked to a ghost. Yeah. And then he laughed at them and was like, that's fun. Get off the fucking golf course, kids. Like, you know, like, get out of here.
Shut up. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The only one who took them seriously was their dad. And again, we don't even know these kids' names because the dad chose to remain anonymous. So on June 2nd, 1973, she finally tells her dad of what happened. And that's when the dad kind of kicks into investigation mode. He kind of kicks open an investigation. He took her seriously because of his first encounters himself. He's skeptical a little bit at first, to be fair, but he said the two things kind of got him. One was just the sheer volume of detail his kid had that felt different than their typical imagination. There was just a lot of like ingrained detail from the berry ear to mouth trick, wooden limbs, yellow hat, like everything about it, he said, seemed way too detailed that she wasn't likely telling at least entirely just a full on story. So the first thing he does to open this thing is he actually hires a real investigator, and he goes and finds the other kid, tracks down the boy who was there, and interviews the boy. And the boy, by all accounts, who was apparently harder to get to talk than her, confirms it. He tells the same story. He tells the same like details that the little girl had, all this stuff. He was just a lot more hesitant to talk about it than the little girl was for one reason or another. We don't really know why. I imagine because it was fucking weird. So then he goes to the site, walks out into the marsh by the airfield to find this metal hut. And lo and behold, just like the kid said, it vanished. Nothing was there. There's not even an indentation. There's no debris. There's no evidence that this thing was ever there at all. And this is, we're talking swampy ground. So it was, you know, wet, and a heavy metal structure sitting on that for a long time would have left a mark. It wasn't a long time between the dad being told and the dad going out to look for this thing. So he finds the workman who'd been out there repairing a post near where the kid said all this happened. He asked them, hey, did you see anything? Like a 7-foot-tall painted fucking
alien Jack in the Box from the future? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They said they saw nothing and they heard nothing on that day. They weren't that far away from where this all happened, but I don't know if they were close enough to have seen like the metal hut and all that stuff. For whatever reason, like, you know, they just didn't see anything like that at all. The other part that's kind of hard to put away is if the siren noise was as loud as the kids were saying, at the very least, you'd think that the workers would have heard that, but seemingly
nobody
at all. Yeah. So after the dad does his investigative work, talks to, gets, you know, interviews, nothing really comes of it. And he just kind of sits on it. There's a little bit of like a time period that goes, he doesn't rush this to anybody. Basically what eventually happens is that a man by the name of Leonard Cramp somehow gets a hold of the story. And Cramp is an actual like real dude on an Isle of Wight local and a UFO researcher and author. Somebody like that people in that scene knew of. He hears of Mr. Y's account and pushes him to put it on the record and finally like get it out there for at least the Bufora people to have. So that happens somewhere between in January, February of 1978. We see it. It's in the 1978 February issue of the Bufora Journal. So we do have record of this. That is to get 4, 5, 6, 7, 5 years after the event happened. It gets on paper. So, you know, about 4 or 5 years, just about. Just so you know as well, like the pedigree of Bufora. Bufora was founded just quickly, 1964, and billed itself as a non-cultist and scientifically evaluative, not a we believe in everything kind of group, at least on paper. The write-up was done by the journal's editor, Norman Oliver. The write-up for this encounter was 4 pages under a title, Report Extra, Ghost or Spaceman 73. The cover of that issue had an artist drawing of actually Sam holding his little
microphone. This is the famous one, right? This is the one we just saw.
Yeah, yeah. Holding his little microphone. And it just had one line underneath that said Ghost or Spaceman. That was on the cover of that journal for that week. Now, this is all hands off. It starts basically like this is as a memory of like some 7-year-old kid. And the memory gets told to the father. The father gives it 5 years. He then has, who's already a believer, goes and reports it. There's a lot of time for this story to kind of fall apart in terms of believability. The issue is there is no physical evidence for this. And for 52 years, that's kind of just how it sits. Make of it what you will. That's the story. It's on paper. Believe what you will. He just wishes to remain anonymous. He doesn't want to get involved. Then in 2025, a folklorist named Paul A.T. Wilson gets put in contact with a woman who says she lives on the Isle of Wight. She's anonymous, wants to stay anonymous, and says she's the child, one of the two children, who encountered Sam the Sandown Clown. And for the sake of talking to him, she just simply wishes to be known as Faye. That's it. That's not her real name. That is just an anonymous name she supposedly gives.
Okay.
To prove she says who she is, she hands Wilson handwritten transcripts of the original Bufora account. This is like the primary material from that account in her own hand, plus sketches, letters, notes she says she kept from across the years. And then she tells him the thing that makes this what made this a full episode, because it reopens the case. 1973 wasn't the only time. She met Sam again 4 more times in 1982, 1983, 1984, and 1989.
So huge break the first time.
Yeah, just about 10 years, 9 years between when she first met him and the second time she met him. So she would have been 16 the next time she saw him.
She sought him out or just he showed up?
Well, we've got a little bit on that. So 1982, 9 years on, she's grown up a bit. Like I said, she's got a part-time job at this point at a horse stable. And one evening, she's walking from work to the bus stop and this Sam steps out from the forest. And she says, tall, exactly like she remembered him. Same strange get up, though he looked less tattered now. And same like paper, like pure white face, painted on features. And she said she just stepped out of the woods and just stood there. And then walked back into the woods. And that's it. She didn't talk to him. He kind of just like stepped out.
She just basically saw him.
Saw him briefly. Then the 1983 one is barely even a mention. Wilson says that there was a 1983 encounter, but in the written material, it's even barely a sentence at all. And that it was like another sighting, and that like it was a brief sighting of him at the woods and then he was gone again. And that's it. Like she said, it was barely like she barely wrote down what it was. Then in 1984, has a little bit more teeth to it. It's winter. Faye's got a boyfriend over in Newport, the main town on the Isle of Wight, and she's heading to go see him. There's a shortcut way she always takes. And on this particular day, she gets a weird, inexplicable feeling that she should take the long way instead, like an intuition, like gut feeling. So okay. She does. And as she's walking the long way, Sam, like he did the past couple times, just steps out from behind a tall fence.
Slides on in.
Yeah, he's like, hello. But this time, he's not doing the bounding moonwalk hops. He's, quote, he was walking steady like a man. like right from the account. He apparently looks more human now with more normal clothing. He still has that paper white skin, but it's like closer to actually looking like skin, I guess. And mm-hmm. his speech and manner were more like a person's. And what he says to her is kind of urgent and clear. As he tells Faye, he says he doesn't have much time left and that he's, quote, using up one of my visits. He tells her he knows what? Where she's
There's
going.
There's like lore. Well, okay. Yeah.
He tells her he knows where she's going to see the boy and that she shouldn't turn around, go home, please. And then after that, he just turns and leaves. She trusts him, goes home. And that night, she finds out her boyfriend and a few friends tried to rob a place, got caught, and went to jail. She never sees the boyfriend again. And Sam is just, he doesn't pop up until 4 years later after this particular encounter. 5 years later, my apologies, until after this encounter. Hmm. On the last and final encounter, 5 years later, Faye is now 24 years old. She's newly married and about to leave the island for good, staying at a friend's place before the move to the mainland. She goes out for one of her walks and she sees a structure she's never seen before. And it's not the gray construction cabin from 1973. This one is long, white, and sleek, like an intercity train carriage with a corrugated, slightly bowed roof. It sits in the landscape, she says, quote, like something that got dropped there from a great height. And standing outside of it, Sam, looking the way that he used to, not like he was last time. He brings her in, and there's a device like a kettle that isn't like, she describes it as a kettle. It looks like a kettle that isn't a kettle. The cups are like porcelain, except they're soft and pliable in her hands. And he pours her tea that she says smells of herbs that she can't name and tastes sweet, but it isn't tea, but it looks like tea and serves it like tea. They talk. And here she describes something she calls a, quote, soft forgetting, a moment of what he told her drained out of her memory afterward, the way a dream does when you wake. But she said three things stayed. He told her the Berlin Wall was going to fall and she didn't believe him.
Okay.
She thought he was talking in riddles on this. He told her this was the last time she'd see him, quote, until the end, end quote. And when she finally asked him straight up, like where he was from, he said he was from this place, but different. Then goodbye. And she stepped out, turned back, and the building that he was in and Sam were just gone.
This place, but different, dude. Yeah, what she asked in the him world?
Where, like, yeah, that's where I keep going. It's just because where my brain is now. It's like our reality, but not it. Like, are they, is he a fae? Is he like a fey creature, like a psychic phenom? Like, what do you?
I guess mean? This explains why you were like, it's either a UFO or a cryptid thing. Like, we don't know because it's very vague.
And he's kind of anything. A ghost. He's kind of a robot. He's kind of an imaginary friend. He's kind of a Gumby character. He looks like a blockhead from Gumby, dude.
Yeah, he kind of does. He
looks
kind
straight
of a
up like
character.
A fucking blockhead from Dumby, whatever I just said.
And it's interesting, too, because as Sam goes on, he like evolves, like he changes. He walks like a man. He has a better like ability to speak. He seems like he has more of like intent or a plan, like rather than just kind of being random. He shows up basically when he maybe is supposed to. And he leaves that weird moment, like that last line he gives her. One of the last lines he gives her, rather, like this is the last time he's going to see her until the end.
End of like, what
does that
exactly
mean?
Yeah.
Like, exactly. The end of her life, the end of like his life, like the end of the movie.
Maybe
like,
he's just
dramatic,
like a toy, like a construct. And he can only be literally used to like dive into the corporeal plane so often.
Maybe like, yeah, maybe like who fucking knows?
That whole like, no, yeah, but like
maybe not though.
The fact that he has
maybe
a
not
limiter?
Though. Not sure about that. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
So weird.
Like, it is bizarre. And like you said, this is one of the last times I can like see you. And then he literally didn't see her for 5 years. It was,
you know,
like,
Meet
maybe
Dave.
He had that one.
You know, Meet Dave?
Meet Dave?
That Eddie Murphy movie?
No.
Never mind. Don't worry about it.
Why? What about you says, you know, I'm going to bring this up.
It could be. It could be right now. Like
about movies.
Did you have you seen Meet Dave, Jesse?
No.
Okay, it's not a good movie. That's why I thought maybe like it would be exactly the type of movie that you wouldn't have seen or like is your favorite movie.
I've seen all sorts of movies that start with meat and I've also seen the movie Dave, but I've never seen the movie Meet Dave.
Meet Dave, dude. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, so like this is like I think this is the exact reason, though, that I would put this in the high strangeness category because it's like. A lot of pointless, messy details, a weirdness that never fucking resolves. Nobody learns anything really. Nobody like, you know, at least with aliens, there's always like that weird, like save the planet, be good to each other sure. kind of thing. With this one, it's just like a weirdness kind of thing. He seems to be like a guardian angel for a moment.
They never quite land on exactly what he's doing here.
Exactly. You know? Yeah, exactly. And the thing is like, well, they like, for instance, the Berlin Wall claim may seem solid, like we're only learning about this in 2025. There's 36, like who
right
really knows? You could sit here and nitpick this thing in a million different ways, of course, but to me there's still enough weird strangeness that kind of sits on all of this, so which kind of leaves us kind of here, like we've got in at the end with like two different Sams. We've got the 1973 Sam of the weird dude popping up, and then the 1980s Sam, which is like a more of a guardian angel becoming more human as she gets older. And I want to posit one last time, the idea of filtering shit through consciousness, because isn't it interesting? The older she gets, the more human and like comprehensible he becomes to her. He stops bounding. He walks, he talks more. He's got clothes on. He looks more like it's skin rather than like a robot in wood. Like, that as she does get old, he still stays super fucking weird, even as she's older, but like it becomes more normal.
I feel it's worth considering. I feel it's significant.
Yeah, it's bizarre. But unfortunately, yeah. that those last encounters that we got from Faye in 2025 through this one guy who would briefly kind of talked about it in a bit in 2025 is where the story stops. We have potentially the young child coming forward and saying, this is me. There's no real way to verify that other than the evidence she supposedly provided, which we can either, you know, agree or disagree with.
She didn't make it like a big money making story for her though, no. either. So
everybody who it happened to stayed anonymous. We have the paperwork of the report knowing that it did in fact happen, or at least it was reported to have happened to Bufora. Like it's not one of those stories that's kind of handed down and there's no paperwork trail. There is an origin source to it. But that's where it sits, a weird amalgam of both a cryptid and an alien and a high strangeness encounter that I'm curious if you what you boys think it could have possibly been, obviously assuming that it is real.
I mean, I've been kind of putting it together as we've been talking about it, but I do think like it's worth talking about. Like he basically says he's not really there. He basically says that his body is temporary and that he only has so long on the planet, or his mission is very specific. Like he's not, you know, just like visiting or something. Like he's not just here to like chill out. It seems like he has something he needs to do, or he knows why he knows what purpose he has. Right. So I feel like he's like a probe.
Yeah. Yeah. Probey kind of feeling. Yeah. Wouldn't fight back.
You know, like when you're at the zoo and like a baby, whatever, doesn't eat. So they like put a sock and paint like an adult version of the animal on the sock. Like it has that vibe to me.
It does. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Yeah, it does. Mm. It really does. Like it is one of my favorite encounters. You know, there's just not a ton to it, but enough to like, it's weird. It doesn't sit clean. Like a lot of things we covered, it doesn't sit cleanly in any particular category.
Certainly not.
You got, Jesse, you got your fingers together. Like, I mean, like,
I kind of
like,
love the idea that like this is an extra dimensional being, that the reason why it's so goofy is because it does, you know, we talk about this often of like, could a two dimensional thing perceive three dimensions, right? Could us as three potentially fourth dimensional beings, because time, perceive yep. fifth dimensional beings? Like, how would we do? And I love the idea that for us, right, to enter a two-dimensional world, it would look insane. But mm-hmm. if we draw a thing that's 2D, it can represent us in that space. So the idea that this thing, whatever it is a higher level being in sort of like a three-dimensional suit or expression of itself. That's why it looks so goofy and weird and
that's
abstract.
Where my head's at, bro.
That's exactly where my head's at.
It like doesn't at, understand yeah. third dimensions, but it's trying its best. And this dude's showing up like, hey, what's up? Yeah, no, this is the best. Like, I made a little thing. Hopefully it works for
all
you.
I got.
And but like inside the suit is whatever a extra dimensional being would be, which is why the whole, because the berry thing's fucking weird. The berry thing of like,
yeah, being like in the ear to the eye to like,
it makes it feel like it's just not actually those things. It's actually just like a chassis.
Yeah, like it's very strange. But also, I'd be fine if it was Fae, because it's England, and I love the idea that the English just have Fae. Ireland, Scotland, the whole UK.
I would
filled with fairies.
I would posit to you, Jesse, like I would posit to you, and this is kind of where I sit in a lot of this. I would posit to you, they're all one and the same. It's the phenomena, big quote, like
right.
air quotations.
But I'm talking
P,
like I would. I want Puck. I want like a puckish rogue vibe. We're like
Jeff the Mongoose kind
of
thing.
I want it to just be.
Oh, he's the Fae for sure.
Yeah. He's a Fae in every way. He is.
I just want it to be like,
he's
know,
your trickster fucker for sure.
They report back to Titania and they're like, oh my God, girl. That shit was great. I messed with them.
Oh my God, girl.
Yeah.
I was Peter McAllister. I'd like a large fry.
And that's it. That's your story of Sam the Sandown Clown, gentlemen. A
incredibly
nice
bizarre. Incredibly weird. I cannot tell you enough, listener. Go. I'm still looking at pictures of this fucking weirdo. Like there's so many weird, like Jack Skellington-esque romantic, like Nightmare King ones, and also like weird, like BMO from Adventure Time ones. I don't know. It's a cool.
There
it's a cool.
Just a ludicrous.
It's a
number
cool character.
Of art renditions of this guy, which to me says
he's just neat.
You know what's kind of funny? Some of them look like a Zelda character.
Big time. Yeah. Big time, or like,
oh, yeah.
Do you remember that game
Alex
Sable?
Said. Like they do
remember that game Sable?
Sable. Oh my God, I think so.
Yeah, it kind of looks like that.
Damn,
that game was sick, man.
Well, that's it, gentlemen. We're off to go do a mini-sode over at patreon.com/IlluminatiPod because you will be back next week with a brand new episode. Alex takes the reins for a couple weeks next week, and I'm very excited for the topic at hand.
It's going to be a crazy one.
It is.
It's a paranoia-laced one.
It is paranoia-laced indeed. I'm excited. Thank you guys so much. We appreciate you. We love you. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Illuminati Podcast. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Mike Martin, joined by the... I don't know who they are. There's two.
What?
Terrence Hill and Bud Spencer.
No.
Neo and Trinity.
No.
I don't understand, and I probably never will. Let me just tell you right now that there's two. Leon Kennedy and Claire Redfield.
I'm telling you, I think he...